YouTubeYourFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 343, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Does the Utah State game have you down? Well, Matt and I try to lift you back up. Okay, well, maybe not. But we do get real about Zach Wilson and what he could do for the Cougars against Hawaii. We talk about the uninspiring defense, and we also dig into the Jeff Grimes offense and why it's not getting as much grief as what Ty Detmer got last year with similar results. This is the CougarFan.com Rising Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rising Shout. And listen to Matt and I right now. We have not talked about the baseball postseason, mainly because I didn't want to hurt your feelings, because your team's not in the baseball postseason.
It's a tender time right now.
We're recording this during game four of the American League Division Series between my Boston Red Sox and kind of your Boston Red Sox. You are a Red Sox fan of a sort.
I am a Red Sox fan of a sort, but I just have to be careful because I don't want to be accused of being a bandwagon Red Sox fan, but I am from the area.
Bandwagon Red Sox fan. You grew up going to games in Fenway. How can you be a bandwagoner? So let's go to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. And this is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. So, you know, we encourage that kind of behavior. The number one ranked women's volleyball team, Matt, defeated San Diego. Kind of a tense match. They dropped their first set in like 2 months. So there was that. But they ended up winning 3-1. This week they've got coming up on Thursday in San Francisco against the Dons, and then Santa Clara on Saturday. So before coming back the next week to the Smith Fieldhouse. So good luck to the Cougars in their pursuit of perfection. Pursuit of perfection.
No, you just said pursuit for perfection.
Yeah, where did I learn that?
Slap it on a t-shirt.
Where did that come from? I'm not sure.
I learned it from watching you.
Matt Taysom Hill, still very involved with the Saints. But the story from the Saints game really is Drew Brees becoming the all-time leading passer, right? They, like, stopped the game.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. Like, they did throw a flag, but...
Did they throw a flag?
I think they waved it, but there was a flag on the field when the whole team came out.
I think the other team declined it, right?
Yeah. But did you see the clip where, because Drew Brees was mic'd up?
No, I did not see a clip with any audio, no.
So you can go and find this. I saw it on Twitter. Like, you can listen to the whole thing, like when he went over and talked to his kids. Can listen to the whole thing. It's pretty neat. I mean, it just kind of, for me, it kind of confirms that, I mean, Drew Brees is a good guy. And I believe that he is a good guy. But it's kind of neat for him to let us all into that moment in that way, you know?
Yeah, and in the game, Taysom Hill, right after that, fails to score the two-point conversion on that kind of anticlimactic. But I love watching him. Now I want to see the Saints kick off so I can see Taysom Hill, number 7, on the edge trying to make a tackle. I think it's fantastic.
Well, they had plenty of kickoffs Monday night.
Yes, they most certainly
because
did.
Because I was supposed to win my fantasy matchup handily until Drew Brees lit the Redskins up.
Yes. Who are you playing this week?
Oh, well, actually, I'm thinking about a different matchup.
Different league? Yeah. Same thing happened. Oh, but I wasn't playing you. I won. I have Brees in our family league, and I needed him to have a huge game to win, and he had a huge game, and I won, so that's fun. Okay, we've talked about
Good for you.
Red Sox, 1990s Boston Red Sox, and fantasy football. People are so excited about this.
They're like, good. They're just glad we're not talking about Utah State.
Yeah, well, we have been delaying from that, Matt, but let's talk about Utah State. Let's go to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
This comes from Todd Ebert. This is off of Facebook. If you want to join the tweet bag, climb on in the tweet bag on Facebook. You can do that, facebook.com/writingshout. You can also go there to watch us do our Facebook Live halftime show.
Halftime
change. It's a rough time in life.
It's a special time.
So Todd says, why are we so terrible in the first quarter? I would say all quarters, Todd, but the first quarter is very fair. Why has Tanner been so bad in anything but go fast, go hard? He's been bad in everything. So I'm being harsh on Todd. Why have the O-line and defense gone from carrying us to killing us? We'll get to that. I don't think the defense is any worse or better. I know everyone's talking about how bad they were on Saturday. I went back and looked at the stats, Matt. The per-play basis, they were fine. It wasn't a great game. It was a mediocre game. But it wasn't a terrible game. It becomes terrible because of the turnovers.
The turnovers kill you, right? Without the turnovers, it's a 24-20 loss.
Yeah, yeah. The defense did not play great. That is not a endorsement of the defense, okay? The defense had a below-average game.
Why are you letting the defense off the hook?
I'm totally not. They had a bad game. And there were missed tackles, which they hadn't really had a ton of missed tackles so far.
Yeah, they did make up for that, didn't they?
And then he says, why does this feel like an even lower point than losing to UMass? I can't say what anyone else feels like. This is not a lower point than losing to UMass at home. It just isn't.
That it doesn't feel that way for me, but I understand his sentiment.
Oh, I totally get it.
Is like, what is going on with our football program?
I totally get it. Utah State is a pretty good team. They may end up being a top 40 team this year. We'll see. They've got some games where they can prove that out. They've only played two decent teams this year, if you want to conclude us in the decent category. Maybe not.
Which I'm not ready to do, by the way, but okay.
Okay, so then he says, hashtag faceback, hashtag cry on in, hashtag
which is clever.
At least we have volleyball. It's true. All those things are true, Todd. Don, our brother, says, are we not talking enough about the injury to Canada and putting too much blame on Mangum? Shouldn't we have been able to run on USU regardless? I really think this is the story of Friday night, is our inability to run the football.
Right, and so I guess to Don's question, is that should we be talking about Canada being out, or is it just generally we're not good at running the football?
So let me ask you a question. Do you believe there's a massive difference between Katoa and Canada?
No.
How big is that gap? I think Canada's better. Is it true or false? Canada is a better running back than Katoa.
Yeah, probably, but I don't think it's light years.
I would say it's pretty small, and the reason I say that is Katoa is a really good receiver and Canada is not, right? So it opens up the playbook a little bit, but I don't think Katoa is still pretty good. There were no holes. Canada's a little bit better after contact per BYU stats man, but I mean that's if there's no holes, there's no holes. Nobody, you know, you can have whoever, right? Unless it's Barry Sanders and they can pop it to the outside, it doesn't matter, right? So I think the Canada injury is a red herring. The offensive line did not open up holes. Period.
Right.
And there's not much we can do. It. Are we putting too much blame on Mangum? No, I don't think we are.
No, I think we're putting the appropriate amount of blame on Mangum.
Yeah. It's not all Mangum, right? But he's not played well. Tyler Anderson via email, and if you want to email us, you can do it at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. He says, I'm wondering if this thinking is premature, just seeing Wilson on one good drive versus Utah State, and then a little bit more against an FCS team. Yeah, we'll get to Wilson here in a second. He asks, what's up with the lack of Bo Hodge? I would have loved to see him maybe do the read option, get a crack at the 4th-and-1 that turned into the pick six. Matt, I'm mystified by the fact that you have a quarterback who played quarterback last year, who's now a running back, and we have yet to see him except in that one situation where it didn't work out. But I just have a feeling like, you know, we did a one-trick play with Hefo throwing a touchdown pass. You've got a running back that can throw the football, and we have not, with an offense that stalled. I'm not saying this is a big deal. I don't think it's a big deal. I am surprised, though, that Hodge has not gotten more snaps. Are you surprised that Hodge hasn't gotten more snaps, especially Canada's injury?
I'm kind of shocked, to be honest. I mean, if part of the reason you move him from quarterback to running back is he's never going to see the field at quarterback, what good did you do to him or to this whole concept of getting the best players on the field as much as possible when you move him to running back? Because you're not putting him on the field anyway.
According to BYU stats, man, he has 9 snaps so far this year. 9. That's basically nothing, right?
Yeah, I mean that's
over six games he's getting in once a game. I mean, it's kind of crazy. But we'll get to some personnel because I think one of the biggest problems this offensive coaching staff is having is managing some of the personnel. But we'll get to that. So where do the Cougars go from here? Right before we get to the Hawaii preview. And we've got a bunch of tweet bag questions. So the first is from Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney!
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. You can tweet at us at BYU_RiceShout. Sweeney says, Was the whole endure to the end and endure it well scriptures written with BYU sports in mind? Hashtag tweet bag. Hashtag depressed bag. No, but it's applicable in this case. Right? It's applicable. I mean... It's not great.
Ever since the Bronco Mendenhall era, I've decided that I'm not. I don't want to get into mixing scriptures with BYU football.
Oh my gosh! Don't be a Ute fan. Don't be a Ute fan with all. Yeah. Oh, they can't quote scriptures in a news conference. That's sacrilegious. Oh, shut up! Sacrilegious is going to the U. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Shots fired.
This is trying to be funny. Man, it probably wasn't. So Zach Thornton has this to say, Matt, at Coronado Zach. How did we get from thinking with this strength of schedule before the season that 3-3 would be good at this point, which we all did, right?
Uh-huh.
We are all hoping for 3-3, to the point that the season is a disaster. By the way, Utah State may end up being in the top three teams we play this year. So Matt, what has happened? At the beginning of the year, you said best case scenario was 3-3. That's yep. Your words. I thought the best case scenario was maybe 4-2, but I thought 3-3 would have been a good landing spot. We're at 3-3. Yet, if you were on Twitter at all for late Friday night, it was not good. It was a dark time on BYU Twitter. Why?
So let me ask you this question.
Okay.
If you look at the schedule right now, right, and if you swap the result, so just the score and end result from Utah State and Wisconsin, swap them. So now we lost to Wisconsin 45-20, and we beat Utah State 24-21.
Yes.
Your feelings about this season change?
Oh, absolutely. But it's crazy. You beat
right.
a top 20 team. One of the best victories in BYU history. Okay?
Right.
And
right.
and we're about ready to fire Satake because of a loss that was a terrible loss. I mean, you know, and the thing that's adding up to me is not this season. It's this season and last season, right? And that's why everybody's reacting this way more than anything else.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We're still
true.
All shell shocked from last season.
Well, but I think if you look, I think we're all still shell shocked from last season. But if you just run down the schedule for a minute, Arizona, it turns out, wasn't very good.
No.
Right. So we beat Wisconsin. We beat McNeese State with the Wisconsin win. You've already talked about that. Phenomenal, big win for the program. Blah 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 blah. McNeese State just absolutely expected. But if you look at these losses, nobody was expecting to lose to Cal. And maybe we underrated them, but the thing that's really the clincher, I think, in people's minds is the way that we've lost these yeah. last two games, is the complete ineptitude of the offense for the past 2 weeks, plus, you know, everybody had kind of convinced themselves, well, you know, maybe we can live with Tanner in a quarterback right now because he manages the game. The offense is kind of working. Washington's a really good defense. Like, we've all just got to calm down. And then we went ahead and turned the ball over three times, all three of which turned into scores for Utah State. And one of which was a bizarre play call on a 4th-and-1 that was like he threw it right into the breadbasket of a defender.
He made a mistake. I'm fine with the play call. I don't have any problem. I don't have any problem running an occasional play action pass on a 4th-and-1. I know people get bent out of shape about it, but all he has to do is throw the ball out of bounds, throw it at the defender's feet, or, oh my gosh, lob it over the defender's head, right? Like, in the end, the play call wasn't maybe the greatest, but there wasn't an interception because of the play call. There was an interception because Mangum just threw it right in the guy's right at the guy's
right
hands.
At the guy's numbers.
As he's looking at him, he just
he's
throws
looking right
gun
at him and it hit him with the football.
Yeah, so I mean, I get what you're saying, and you would have called a different play, and I would have called a different play. Fine, but the play call works. The receiver's open, the running back. All he has to do is get it to him, right? And you know, in the end, the defender didn't actually make the right call. The defender should have been covering the back. The defender made a mistake, and Mangum bailed him out. Okay, right? Because the receiver's open. It's an easy first down if he throws it and gets it to him. Now, I get it. It's not an easy throw at that point anymore, right? Putting some touch on it, sidearm, moving out a little further. All those things, you know, are not easy. But I think a good college quarterback makes that, and we've got a first down, and no one's talking about it, right? No one's worried about the play call.
Right, but that isn't what happened, right?
That is not what happened.
And this is what's got everybody riled up right now, is that the team the last 2 weeks has looked like they did last year. And so it's really easy to forget about the win against Wisconsin when all of a sudden you realize that you're looking down the rest of your schedule and we don't even know that we're going to make a bowl game.
Well, and here's the other thing. We're supposed to be a running team this year, right?
Yep.
We've had one good running game, and that was Wisconsin. The rest of the year, 4.2 yards against a not very good Arizona defense. 3.4 yards against Cal. 3.8 yards a carry against McNeese State. 2.1 yards a carry against Washington, and 3.6 yards a carry against a Utah State team that had been susceptible to the run up until we played them. Right now, again, I think Mangum should be replaced. We'll get to that in a second. I don't actually think it's a very hard decision. But the running game that was supposed to be here is not. And I think a big, huge reason of that is everybody's doing the same thing. They are playing soft with our wide receivers and stacking the box, right?
Yeah.
So there's no holes. Part of it's offensive line. Part of it is missed assignments. But part of it is there are more defenders in the box than there are blockers, right? And nobody's afraid of our passing. And the reason we've had some success on occasion on a drive or two is because guys are freaking wide open because nobody's worried about it, right? So that's why when people are like, well, we should blame the offensive line. You cannot win college football games averaging 5 yards an attempt on a pass. Nobody does. Nobody wins football games doing that, except for extreme run teams like you know, the academies. Nobody else wins football games that way. It is just not something that works. So, I'm fired up, Matt. I'm already fired up again.
Oh, I hear you.
So Brian Taylor on Facebook has this to say. He says, as you know, I'm no expert at BYU football. We've never said that, Brian.
He's just as much of an expert as anybody else on there.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert.
But he says, Mangum has happy feet and poor footwork. We talked about this last week, Matt. He doesn't move well in the pocket. I would say sometimes he does. He is inconsistent. Sometimes he moves, like, makes really good moves in the pocket. And other times it looks like it's his first time. Has trouble with his reads and progressions. Leads to inaccuracy. He asks this. How did he get to be a fifth-year senior with all of these mechanical issues? I have no idea. Now, he has had three different offensive coordinators since he's played, or four?
I think we're...
When he was a freshman, it would have been Anai, right? But he's had at least three different offensive coordinators, three different QB coaches, right? I think that's part of your answer. Do you think that's fair, or do you think it's not? Do you think different people have messed with his mechanics in different ways, and that's just made it even worse?
I think the latter is probably true. Is that because if you look over time, what he looks like throwing the ball now is not what he looked like as a freshman. You know, a lot of people make comment about this weird sidearm thing he's doing this year that seems to be new. When I first saw him doing it, I thought maybe he had jacked up his shoulder. You know, I think that the the coaching carousel certainly has not helped Tanner Mangum's development as a quarterback. But the more fundamental piece, I think, of Brian's question is, you know, why can't we get this right? Why can't we figure out how to take a guy that's supposed to be a highly touted quarterback coming out of high school and turn him into something that's above average?
Yeah, because right now we're seeing below average, right?
Yeah, and this is maybe the second time, right? But it, you know, in retrospect, we know that there was a lot of other weird stuff going on with Heaps, right?
Yeah, Heaps is a weird example because he was most services, if I'm remembering right, had him as a 4-star, not a 5-star. He was towards the top of a fairly shallow recruiting class, so I think people remember Heaps as being a bigger recruit than he was.
Like, and the people around Heaps had figured out how to make prime the hype machine.
Yes, yes.
And so, because once you start getting offers, you get an offer from an SEC school, like stuff will kind of start to cascade after that. And they knew that, so they chased the Vanderbilt offer and some of these other things to get the hype machine rolling. And so, I think that you're right. I think that that
Mangum,
meal looked a little bit bigger than it really was.
Mangum,
right?
Was legit, man. He was a legit, like, top-flight quarterback prospect. And I'm with Brian. It is a little unnerving that here he is, a fifth-year senior, and we're talking about his footwork and his mechanics, right? The fact that he hasn't ended up becoming a BYU all-time great, that was always a long shot anyway, right? Even with a top prospect, right? It's just things happen. And injuries and ineffectiveness and things like with Heaps happened in his personal life that, you know, we can't control, and that he, you know, that he couldn't control, right? So you look at that, but it is a little unnerving, like you said, that we can't even make him an average quarterback. That's weird.
Like
he should be
right.
at least serviceable.
Even if they're both overrated, they should at least be average.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So he makes a good point. Nicoletto on Twitter, Nicoletto, says, what's the bigger problem, Tanner Mangum, the defensive play calling, or the horrible run game, sans Canada? Personally, I don't think Mangum is a problem. Look at his last few games. He's getting better and better and looking decent throwing the ball. Hashtag climb on end. Hashtag 3-3, not a losing record. Matt, do you feel like Mangum is getting better?
Nope. I think he looks better. Because they're not asking him to do anything that's hard for him.
Yes.
They're calling plays that they know he can execute and they weren't doing that as much earlier in the year. So it looks statistically like it's getting better, and the level of competition is about to start decreasing a little bit over the next several weeks, which would only serve to pad the numbers more.
He looked a little better against Washington, and I think any looking better went absolutely backwards against Utah State. So if he had had another good game, another decent game, I should say, against Utah State and we win, I think at that point I probably back off the Wilson stuff, right? And just say they're never going to put him in. He had a couple of decent games in a row and they're just going to ride this out, right? But the game against Utah State was such a disaster for the offense, but what I don't want to lose from Nick's question is the play calling on defense. So before we get to Wilson and what we should do with Wilson and Mangum, the defense is really uninspiring.
Didn't a similar loss to Utah State once cost a BYU defensive coordinator his job?
It did. Now, to be fair, the defense was much worse in that game statistically than what happened on Friday night. But yes.
And that coach had also lost the locker room, right? There was like serious issues with players and coaching personnel.
Yeah, but I'm going to say right now, I don't know about the locker room. We're in game 6 of the season. And afterwards, Satake and other people are saying, well, we're missing tackles, and that just seems like a lack of discipline. We're in game 6. Like, maybe he hasn't lost the locker room, I'm doing air quotes, but it feels like he's lost the defense, right? I don't care if they like him, if they're not playing well. I mean, it was not a good defensive performance. If you go to Football Outsiders, does these really cool like team profiles with their advanced statistics. And if you go to the one for BYU and look at their defensive statistics. There's some really disturbing things, okay? We do a really good job preventing big plays, okay? We're 20th in the country in big play rate. Only 5% of the plays against us are big, okay? But we are 94th in the country on standard down and distance success rate, meaning that teams are getting more than 4 yards a pop on first and second down. So what that tells me is we are playing back, we are trying to stop the big play, and we are not being aggressive at all at the line of scrimmage in either the run or the pass game. And I think the problem with that philosophy is we don't have an offense. This goes back to the old Bronco philosophy. Broncos defenses did this sometimes. But his thing was, I got to score more than 24 points, right? Remember, and people made fun of him for that?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, his philosophy wasn't wrong. Like, if you're going to have a defense like this, that's fine. But you have to be able to score points. If you can't score points, then your defense has to be more aggressive. Yeah, you may give up some bigger plays, but you've got to create more turnovers and negative plays because your offense isn't capable of scoring 24 points, right? Is this flowing what I'm saying, or do you think I'm barking up the wrong tree?
No, I think what you're saying makes sense.
And third down and long, we are the worst team in the country on third down and long. 124, so I guess that's not worse. But our success rate on that is less than 40%. That's usually a down third and long, and that's more than third and eight. It's usually one where defenses, you know, have success rates sometimes in the 70s, right? And ours is not even 40. Again, not being aggressive enough. You're playing back. You're giving them those throws, and it's showing up. So I think the defensive play calling, I think Nick is right. I don't know if it's the issue, but this defense, 2 years in a row, we've got a mediocre defense. And I'm not in love with that, especially with the offense we have. We talked about this at the beginning of the year. We needed a top 40 defense to make a bowl game this year, and we don't have one.
And we probably need more than that at this point in the season because teams have figured out what to do to our offense. You know, and they know what we're uncomfortable doing, and they understand that if they stack the box and take that running game away, they can give us other things, and we might complete one. You know, we might get a play over the top every once in a while, or pull something off some type of trick play. But you're not going to score 24 points if they can just take away the run game.
No, you are not. You're not going to. So Matt, let's get back to the Wilson thing. Wilson comes in. He has a 27-yard run. Right, that basically saved statistically it being one of the worst rushing games like in recent history for BYU. You know, matching, I guess, that LSU game, right? That one was pretty bad if I look back at the stats. He has a couple of really nice throws, okay? Everybody was making these things that it's all about he was doing against the backups. I think a couple of people have come out on Twitter who've rewatched the game. I rewatched the game, by the way. No joke.
You rewatched that dumpster fire?
And most of it was I wanted to see some of what was happening on the defense. But one thing I noticed, Utah State was not playing all their subs. It was about, there were about, I think, 7 or 8 of the guys on the field during that drive were starters for Utah State, including the guy that had the, or guys that are in the regular rotation, right? Because just like us, they don't just play 11 defenders, right? But these were not the third string guys. You know, they were leaving some of these guys out. So I think Wilson, now, are they playing as hard? Were they being as aggressive defensively? Of course not, right? They're up by a lot, you know. But I will say this. I just think he looked way better than anything that Mangum has looked all year.
Yes.
But I want to get to something else, personnel-wise, okay? So everyone's talking about Wilson. I have a much bigger beef than Wilson versus Mangum.
What in the world could that be?
Wide receivers. We are playing and have been all year playing the wrong pass catchers.
Would you like to know more? Yeah, tell me more.
Okay, so looking at BYU Statsman again, I've got his statistics. So thank you. He shared them with us. you look at, and then we can also look at, there's pass catching statistics that Football Outsiders has. So right now, Hifo, according to Football Outsiders, is our most effective wide receiver. Anybody surprised by that note?
No.
No. I mean, that's one that we could have all told you, all right? Now, who's getting the second most snaps at wide receiver, Matt?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I'll give you the answer to that once I get to the snap log. Where is the snap log? Anyway, the point is, there's a bunch of wide receivers playing right now that are not very effective. The one that surprised me was Shumway has actually been one of our more effective wide receivers. But Simon has been absolutely terrible. He's been 16% worse than the average wide receiver. Holker hasn't been great, and Moroni, before he got hurt, was mediocre, okay, as a receiver. But those were the guys at the beginning of the year. Now, this has shifted a little bit, getting most of the snaps. Bushman not playing more early on is, I don't know what happened. I don't know if he came in under overweight and lazy and the run blocking or whatever else. Bushman stretches the field. You know, Steve Pierce, what's that, what's his handle? Not Jimmer or whatever.
Post Jimmer
or whatever. Every time he tweets about football, he comes off really dumb. But he said something, why are they throwing to the slow white guy? Bushman is not slow, first. And second of all, he's our best freaking pass-catching option. Him and Hifo. Maybe they're 1 and 2, 1A, 1B. But the fact that he was playing so few snaps at the beginning of the year, I don't think they know who to play. I don't think they've picked the wide receivers. I think Kali, Shumway, Hifo, and Romney are the only wide receivers that should be playing on a regular basis. I get it.
Yeah, but we're still seeing, like, I guess Gunner and Dax got in there with Zach Wilson towards the end of the game, right?
But I don't want Milne either.
Holker is still getting targeted.
Well, there's only two tight ends now. So, I mean, Holker's gonna see things, and I think he will be fine long term. But I don't want to see Micah Simon getting any time. I don't want to see Neil Pau'u. I don't want to see Milne. And Romney's got to get. He's got 12 targets this year. He gets this catch, then he stiff arms a guy, right? Like he's a physical beast. And Shumway made an amazing. People make fun of Shumway all the time. His adjustment on that back shoulder throw was amazing, right? And the problem has been Mangum can't make that throw. Mangum hasn't thrown a back shoulder pass, I think, ever. Now, Wilson, to be fair, it wasn't the best back shoulder throw. Shumway bailed him out with a really, really nice catch. But all I'm saying is I don't know that we've played the right people in the passing game. I think we geared up to run the football, and I think we shot ourselves in the foot because there weren't enough threats on the field to stretch the defense and create space for the running game. And Bushman is that guy. Romney could be that guy. And he's been effective in his limited playing time. He's actually been statistically our best wide receiver. Not fair, though. He's only got 7 catches. But to be fair, Hefel's only got 18. So it's not like we're dealing with massive sample sizes anyway. But
yeah, but Hifo's got a lot more targets, too.
Hifo's got a lot more targets. All I'm saying is this. I don't know that Grimes and his staff has figured out who to play, and I'm not sure they've been very good at it. And if I roasted Detmer nonstop on this podcast for about a year and a half, and Grimes has an offense that's only marginally better statistically than what Detmer had than last year, then I got to roast Grimes. This offense sucks. And if they don't change it and do something different, that includes Wilson, wide receivers, different things, they will continue to be terrible the rest of the year. And that's my fear, is that it appears that they have no desire to put Wilson in. Maybe based on the snap counts from this last game, they're changing a little bit on the wide receivers. But I just look at this, and Bushman's only playing because MLP got hurt, right? I don't know, Matt. I'm very concerned about this offensive coaching staff and whether they know what the heck they're doing. That's what makes me sad versus last year. Is like last year, I'm like, well, if we just get a decent offensive coordinator, we'll get past this. And I know some people are going to say, we just don't have the personnel. I don't believe it. We should be able to be at least a top 75 offense with the people that they have on the field, right? I'm not saying we'd be top 20, but we've got to not be terrible. Am I off, or are you following?
No, I'm with you. I mean, we should be better than we are, right? I mean, we've got, like, Matt Bushman is a real talent. I absolutely agree with you there. You know, when you look at what he's done with the opportunities that he's been given, his numbers are pretty good.
Yes.
You look at who the ball is going to most of the time, and I agree with the distribution doesn't seem to make sense, right? Should Bushman and Micah Simon be seeing the same number of targets?
Oh, it's insane to me.
Like, it's crazy, right? Because Bushman's been targeted 16 times, Micah Simon 14 times, but Simon's only caught 5 to Bushman's 10. You know, and the difference in yardage is well over 100 yards in what they've done with those. And so if you continue to see Micah Simon he keeps getting those targets, that does not seem to make any sense. It doesn't really indicate that there's appropriate adjustments going on there, right?
And if he gets another jet sweep, I might throw something through my television if Simon ever gets another jet sweep.
Yeah, shouldn't happen. Now, but let's talk about the jet sweep for just a second, right?
Yeah.
So, when we started with the jet sweep at the beginning of the year, I kind of rolled my eyes. I'm like, I don't want to watch this all season.
You hate
this
the is jet lame. Sweep.
And then, but then I came around and I was like, hey, look, if this helps set up the rest of the offense, I can get behind this. But what I've seen the past couple of weeks is there is nothing setting this offense up. And I understand that Washington is a really good defense, and we may see another defense like that for the rest of this year.
We probably won't.
Very, very
maybe Utah's, not as good as them, but Utah's pretty good too.
Yeah, Utah's no slouch. And by the way, like, we will not win that game. Like, based on the information in front of us right now, that game's extremely painful to watch.
Something massive would have to change to make me feel differently about that game.
So I think that we should be an offense that can do better than what we've seen the past 2 weeks, especially at this point in the season. But the fact that we were having to rely on the jet sweep just to make any of this work, it turns out, was an indicator that there was a problem with what the personnel that they had chosen to put on the field could execute.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the jet sweep as long as it's a way to get the ball in playmakers' hands, right? In the hands of Hefo, in the hands of maybe Dylan Colley or Dylan Collier,
Dylan Collier. Some of these announcers, these guys are ridiculous. Talon Chumois.
Talon Chumois.
But now that teams have figured out that all you have to do is stack the box and take the run game away, the jet sweep's not going to work. Like, everybody sees it coming now, and they have no reason to back up off the line of scrimmage because they know you're not going to throw a 15-yard pass.
Right, right. No,
like, they know you're not going to, and because you're going to hit a receiver in the feet or it's going to be a pick. So they have no reason to respect that, and they see the jet sweep coming. And so they're not worried about creeping up because you're not going to throw it over the top on them.
So on BYU Sports Nation on Saturday, Brian Logan got on. I don't know if you've seen this video, but it was quite good. And he talked about when Jaime Hill got fired and all that stuff, right? But one of the things he said in that segment was, we may, and I've wondered the same thing, as an independent playing a lot of P5 schools, we may just have to have a mobile quarterback. We may just have to have a guy that can pick up a 4th and 5 or 3rd and 5 with his feet if the play doesn't work, right? That may just be a skill we have to have. Now, maybe if he's an elite passer, that's irrelevant, right? Tom Brady isn't that guy, and he does all right. But Tom Brady also is playing for the Patriots, right? And not BYU.
A little bit different.
True or false, Matt? In your estimation, to win these games consistently, do we need to have a mobile quarterback? True or false?
True.
I think Brian's right. I think Logan's onto something. Anyway, well, we should probably get on to the Hawaii game. But before we get there, Gary Payne on Twitter, that's @FastBreakGP, said, did the 2-hour church announcement improve your weekend after the embarrassment Friday night? Matt, did it improve your weekend?
It did improve my weekend. It improved every weekend for the rest of my life.
So he says, Gary says, and these are true facts, Hawaii has one of the worst pass defenses in FBS. That is true. Zach Wilson start, let him get reps, or let Tanner look good against the Hawaii D, then wait for a QB change. I think we're both Wilson. You got to start Wilson
right
on Saturday.
But I want to be crystal clear. Starting Wilson for me is not about getting Wilson reps or preparing for next season. I think that that whole line of thinking is defeatist and lame. We want to win football games now, right?
Yes. You put Wilson in because
I want to go to a bowl game, and I want to stop getting embarrassed. This isn't about prepping for the next season. This is about beating Hawaii,
which right now
I'm not confident we could do. If the offense we watched last Friday night comes out against Hawaii, I think we lose that football game. I don't care what the spread says and what Vegas thinks. We can't, with that offensive performance, we cannot. I don't know who we beat. We maybe beat Northern Illinois. Maybe I don't know that we beat UMass, for Pete's sake, right?
Yeah, we'll
something
beat
has got to change. But something has got to change.
Yeah.
So you start Zach Wilson because he provides a spark, and he can do some things that that we know for a fact Tanner Mangum cannot do at this point. It's not about 2019 right now. I want to win the games that are in front of us, but that's why I put Zach Wilson in.
And it gives you, I think it gives you a chance against Boise, right? If he gets the rep argument, to me, only works if it's reps against Hawaii and Northern Illinois, so that when you go to Boise against a pretty good team, though they had a bad weekend too, you go against Boise against a very good team, you've got a chance to outscore them, right?
Right, you don't make this decision until you get that much closer to the Utah game. I am not watching another 54-10 loss to Utah.
Yeah, you will. If it happens, you'll still watch it.
So
Hawaii is not a great team. Better than last year, though, and that's, I think, what's making you and other people nervous. If you look at their Football Outsiders statistical profile, you can see that they are a team that is very good, throwing the football. They are one of the worst defenses in America. They are a worse defense than we are on offense. Does that make you feel better?
No.
It does me. I think we'll put up yards against these guys. I mean, Utah State wasn't a great defense, but they were a mediocre defense. This is like a really bad defense. But they do have a pretty good offense, and that's what frightens me is with Mangum, if they can score 30 points, I don't know with Mangum if we can score 30 points.
Well, and I know I know they haven't played the same level of competition that we've been dealing with, right? Like, they've beat the likes of Wyoming and Duquesne or whatever, right? But at the same time, like, this kid, and it sounds like he's going to start, this Cole McDaniel or whatever his name is. I guess he practiced today, so I think he's going to be good, but – I mean, good to go, but he's thrown for over 2,000 yards and 24 touchdowns.
They have the worst strength of schedule in the FBS right now, according to Football Outsiders, and we're like 17th. So I think that's why Vegas has this game where they have it. I think it really boils down to Vegas does not believe in this offense. They don't. They just think they've had some games against terrible teams and put up good numbers, and BYU's defense, though not great, mediocre, is probably the best defense they've seen, right? So,
But for me, like, they've played some of these bad teams close, right? Like Colorado State, that one was in reach. Army was definitely, they lost that game, but that game was in reach. San Jose State, right? They went 5 overtimes with San Jose State. So that 44 points is a little bit weird, right?
Deceiving, yeah.
But if they put up 30 points on us, I don't care how bad their defense is. We're going to struggle because we can't get out of our own way. Like,
yeah,
can we put 30? Can we score 30 points?
Well, how often have we done 30 points this year?
I don't want to talk about it.
I mean, right? We've struggled for years now to score that many points. It's been years, right? So, and again, if we were playing their backup quarterback, I'd feel maybe a little different, right, about their ability to score points. But it looks like you said, he may be ready to go. So Matt, what do we got to do to win on Saturday night?
Mangum's got to throw for 200 yards.
Mangum. Wilson's got to throw for 300.
Wilson's got to throw big time.
Yeah. We want to sling it all over the place and come out slinging it. And then we just can't turn the ball over. Right?
Yeah, right. I wish I could say that should just be table stakes, right? But we can't turn the ball over, and I'll change my 200. I'll go to 250. We need 250 plus passing yards.
Yeah, I think that's a good number. So Vegas has BYU by 12.5. Are you taking the Cougs there or the Rainbow Warriors?
I think the Warriors cover that.
Yeah, me too. Over under 54.5.
I gotta do some quick math. I'm under.
I'm under on that one as well. Total yards for BYU. This one's kind of depressing. So far this year, our best output from a total yard standpoint was 392 yards against. So do we break 400? Yes. I'm going to say yes. We break 400 in this game for the first time because this defense is terrible.
Yeah, based on what I'm predicting, I think we would have to.
Okay. So total yards for Hawaii, they're averaging like 440. I'm going to put that one at 420.
I'm taking the under.
I am also taking the under, but not by a lot. Passing yards for whoever starts, over under 225.
Over.
I'm going to take the over as well. Rushing yards for BYU so far this year, their best game, of course, was Wisconsin at 197. They haven't broken 60 yards the past 2 weeks. Over under 105.5. yards.
Just to be clear, this is how many rushing yards Hawaii gets?
We have, BYU.
Oh, we have.
Yeah.
Over under at 105, I'm taking the over.
I'm going to take the over as well.
I mean, they're giving up 150 rush yards a game against teams like Duquesne and San Jose State.
We should be able to run all over these guys. But I thought that was going to be true against Utah State. It didn't pan out exactly like I imagined. But here's the thing. If Wilson comes out, or Mangum, whoever, comes out and completes some deep passes to some of these wide receivers past 10 or 15 yards, then the rushing game becomes easy, right? Then all of a sudden, you're there are these massive holes, and whoever the running back is, right, is just piling it up.
Yeah, so they have to back up a little bit. They can't stack the box. If we can take that away from the defense, then, yeah, of course, it opens up the running game.
So, Matt, what's your prediction for this game?
So, with all of the numbers that we're looking at here, I I'm going to caveat this and say I only believe that this is true if two things happen.
Okay.
We cannot turn the ball over, and we have to start Zach Wilson. Both of those things being true, BYU wins this game 28-24.
I've got almost the same. I've got 27-24 for the Cougars, and I believe Wilson needs to start, or I think you could lose this game.
I agree. If you come back to me before the game starts and you say we're going with Mangum, I'm changing my prediction, and I actually would predict a loss.
But are we being too pessimistic? This is one of the worst defenses we will face, like, ever.
Right? You watched this offense the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, against one of the best defenses in the country and a decent defense. I have watched them. Hawaii is neither of those things. Their defense has been bad against the worst teams in America, right?
Do you feel like our offense has gotten worse every week since Wisconsin?
Yes, but again, who have they been playing, right?
Turn the ball over three times against Wisconsin. You didn't turn the ball over three times. Well, you know,
but
you
some of that's luck, right? Like, some of that's just luck. There was a couple throws against Wisconsin that were close to being picked off, right? Some of that's luck. I mean, what you're kind of saying is Wisconsin was a fluke game, which I'm not disagreeing with, if that's what you're saying. But what I'm saying is...
That is what I'm saying.
Hawaii's defense is going to be one of the worst defenses we have played. And I think both of our predictions might be way too pessimistic, even if Mangum is playing. There's a good chance with Mangum playing and doing the exact same thing we did that we rack up 200 yards rushing and Mangum doesn't have to do anything against Hawaii. Right? Which is, to me, a bad scenario because in the end, what happens with that scenario? You end up leaving Mangum in because
and
now
we get
you start,
demolished by Boise State and Utah.
Right, right. Because you think, well, see, Mangum, we don't have to, he doesn't have to throw for 250 yards and throw passes past the line of scrimmage for us to win. So, Matt, rest of the season, Andre Hutchins has this task at AC underscore Hutchins. Do you guys still, what kind of beef? Is it tofu beef now?
Can it be soy? I actually like soy.
No, it can't. It's got to be tofu. Game. You and Matt both each get to sit down with one member of the coaching staff and ask them any question, and they have to answer you honestly. Let's say two questions for each coach. What are you going to ask them? How about this? You pick one coach, I pick one coach, and we get to ask them a question. Who's your coach?
So who do I want you to ask a question to?
Yes.
I want you to talk to Coach Tuiaki.
Okay. My question is going to be, are you allergic to blitzing?
Oh, jeez.
Is that too sarcastic of a question?
I'm
just
like
curious. Maybe
pointed.
He has an allergy.
I feel like it's a little pointed. But his honest answer to that question is going to be no. Nobody's actually physically allergic to blitzing. At least I don't think.
Okay, let me rephrase then. Do you believe that blitzing has any place in the game of football? Is that still
too? I don't know what was up with that, but you just caused me to start the hiccups. Like, I'm having a physical reaction to the question you just posed.
Yeah, I would like to see a couple of blitzes this week against Hawaii. So, Matt, I'll have you ask one question of Jeff Grimes.
At what point did you realize that you needed to put in Zach Wilson? Was it before or after you actually did it?
See, who's being sarcastic now?
That's a real question. That's a real question because, and I'd love to have a follow-up question to it, right? When I was done, like, well, okay, then talk and explain to me the reasoning behind the decision in the timing. I mean, I would have had the hook out on Mangum much earlier in the Utah State game. He would have been out.
Yeah, it was bizarre, to be honest. Here's the other thing for me is
if the competition is that close, I don't understand why Mangum's still in.
So was the competition not close? Was that just coach speak to make Wilson feel good? Because if the competition was close, I don't understand what's happening. Like, why didn't you?
If the competition wasn't close, you would have kept Bo Hodge in the quarterback room because you'd been like, oh, geez, like the talent drop off after Mangum's really bad. Like, we need to have some more options.
Yeah, we need depth in case Mangum gets hurt.
Right. So the move of Bo Hodge running back signals to me that they really believe that Zach Wilson could come in and play right away. Right.
Yeah, it's bizarre. A lot of this doesn't make any sense to me.
That's why my question to Jeff Grimes is, at what point did you realize that Zach Wilson was the better option? Was it before or after the Hawaii game, assuming that the decision they make at this point, and based on what Kalani has said this week, it sounds to me like we should expect to see Zach play on Saturday night. But that's why I'm asking him that question, is what the devil is going on?
What the bleepity bleep is going on. All right, we've got another question here from CougFan82. He says, what does BYU have to do the rest of the year to classify this season as a success? Hey, and congrats to Matt. You ran the Chicago Marathon this past weekend, which is awesome.
I sure did.
Congrats
sure
to
did.
You. He says, those picks make it look like you just finished a short jog. You haven't seen all the picks. There's some picks where you don't look like you finished a short jog.
Yeah, there's one pick where I showed my 3-year-old, and there's a picture of me, and then there's other people in it, obviously. And he said, Dad, what are you yelling at that woman?
nothing good. And then he says,
I can tell you, son.
Yeah, any story behind the shoulder tattoo, hashtag climb on in, hashtag tweetbag. Matt, your shoulder tattoo is visible. Would you like me to tell the story, or would you like to tell the story?
I'm interested to know what your version of the story is, so should I just let you go ahead, and then I'll edit it for
Sure, why not? So you were a freshman at Brigham Young University, a place I think most of our listeners...
Quasi-freshman. It was my third semester.
Well, I was trying to avoid certain details.
But it was pre-mission. Yeah, that's cool.
I was trying to avoid certain details.
We're talking about the tattoo. Let's just lay it all out.
Yeah, yeah. So as my memory is that you came to my apartment to show me your new tattoo.
Yep.
And you raised up your shirt and showed me this tattoo. And I said, as I recall, you're an idiot.
Yeah, it's something along those lines.
Yeah.
You may have toned it down a little bit just now, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. And I said, why did you get a tattoo? And what you said was, I won a bet. And I said, isn't that what usually happens when you lose a bet? And that is my memory. Now I'd love for your editing, because obviously I wasn't there. Because the other thing I asked you was, well, why didn't you ask me my advice on getting a tattoo before you got it? And you said, well, you would have talked me out of it.
You would have told me not to do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the short version of this is a couple of 18, 19-year-old guys just being 18 and 19-year-old guys. Like, there's not any really more meaning to it than that, right? And the bet was, and, you know, we'll just go ahead and lay it out there. The bet was this. We decided to do this. And so we went to I think we went to a place in Springville to do it. There weren't a lot of options. I think there's some more options closer to campus now, but anyway, so we went to a place in Springville to do it, and the bet was that my buddy would pay for mine. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I've started, so I'm going to tell you all. The bet was that my buddy would pay for mine if I could go through the entire process without cussing. And I successfully won that bet, so I got the tattoo paid for. So I got that tattoo for free. And so sometimes the joke then people will make is, well, you get what you pay for. But
Which is fair, anyway, by the way.
We were just kids. Which I think is the story about a lot of people my age who've got tattoos that look like this is just a bunch of kids just goofing around.
So his first question, to go back to it, is what do we have to do the rest of the year to be a success? We got to make a bowl game.
Yes, that
which
is how
is
you
– possible.
That is what success is at this point.
At this point, you need to win 6 or 7 games for this to be a success. And I think with a win against Hawaii – you're 4-3, and you've got a couple winnable games left with UMass and New Mexico State. So I know everyone's very, very – the way we lost against Utah State is just terrible, and it made you feel – everybody feel terrible, and until we found out that there's going to be 2-hour church, everybody was depressed, right? But it still can – at the end of the – we said at the beginning of the year, if they could be 7-5 – or even 6-6, I mean, it's an improvement over last year. Get back to a bowl game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Matt, let's talk about – oh, Joel Everett. Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time tweet bagger.
See, now he's just milking it.
I feel like he's messing with us now.
I wondered if we should just – I think he's going to keep doing this. So from now on, when he says that, we should just welcome Joel to the tweet back.
Or say, oh my gosh, another Joel Everett.
There's a lot of Joel Everetts. Yeah. This is a very common name.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about our chances of making a bowl game? Matt, how concerned are you on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being like, we're not going to make a bowl game, I don't think.
So I'm not sure how I feel about the Hawaii game, right? I think right now that could go either way. What we need to do? What do we got to do? We got to win 3 more games.
Correct.
And I believe we have 4 winnable games left on the schedule. So I'm not ready to hit the panic button just yet. But I'm at like a 7.
I would say a 6. I'm at like a 6. I'm concerned. I think we have not shown enough. Even with this is crazy. We beat Wisconsin for heaven's sakes. But after these last 2 weeks, I don't know that we've shown enough where I can just say pencil in victories against Hawaii, New Mexico State, and UMass, right?
I can't do it.
A week ago, I was ready to do that.
But after the way
we lost to Utah State, now, again, we may be overreacting. If Utah State ends up being a top 40 team, then I don't know that it actually changes.
Doesn't change my opinion.
Perspectives. Oh, it changes my opinion a lot, right? I mean, you get blown out by a team that's like 60th in the country. That's not good. Any blowout's not good. But you get, if it's a top 40 team, then you say, well, I mean, they're still going to beat. We're better than we were last year.
But there were some bad decisions on the field in the moment, pass.
I know.
And bad play calls. Yeah. And you can make bad decisions and bad play calls against New Mexico State just like you can against Utah State.
Yeah, that is true. All right, Matt. Well, let's finish off by the college football playoff. Now, your picks last time we did this a couple weeks ago were Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Ohio State. Your Notre Dame pick is looking fantastic. Here's my question, Matt. With Notre Dame's fairly weak schedule the rest of the way, do you think there is a chance that they go undefeated and get bumped by a one-loss conference champion and don't get in the college football playoff? Is that, like, greater than 10% chance?
Nope.
You think if they go undefeated, they are in the college football playoff. Right now, they just have to win, baby.
Notre Dame is in control of their own destiny at this point.
I think you're right, even though their schedule's not great. And I think what helped them a lot was Oklahoma losing.
Yep.
Right? Because here was the disaster scenario for them. Alabama wins, okay, and goes undefeated. Clemson goes undefeated. Ohio State goes undefeated. And Oklahoma goes undefeated. If that happens, they're out. They're never going to put them in over four undefeated conference champions who've also won a conference champion. Now, the chances of that ever happening are darn near zero, right? But that was their nightmare scenario, that you have five undefeated teams and they still don't get in. I think you're right. I think as it's constructed now, they just have to win out, which is not, even with their schedule, all they have to do is have one slip-up, and they're going to have a hard time getting in. Because they don't have anybody, I think, left on their schedule where a slip-up would be like, well, yeah, but still, they're better than a one-loss Oklahoma.
And I think if you look at the schedule, right, if you look at the schedules of the remaining unbeaten teams, there's not going to be I don't think there's going to be five unbeaten teams across the board at the end of the season. West Virginia is going to drop one. Now, they've got a couple of tough games left on their schedule. And then you won't have two undefeated teams coming out of the SEC.
Clemson could slip. Ohio State still has some tough games on their schedule. And then they're going to have a conference championship game that's not going to be easy.
I don't think Clemson slips. Maybe in a conference championship game.
I'm just saying, right, they now. Could. They could slip, right? I mean, they are not Alabama. If Alabama slips, to be honest, I'm going to be shocked if they don't finish undefeated as good as they've played. But again, they could slip too.
But if Alabama loses to Auburn, what does that do to them?
Then if they still win their conference championship game, then if they get into it with a loss and win, they're still in the college football playoff.
Yeah, right. I think you're right.
A one-loss SEC champ gets to the college football playoff.
What if Alabama and Georgia get to the, this is a weird scenario, we don't even get into all this, but what if Alabama and Georgia get to the conference championship game? Georgia wins. You have an undefeated Georgia team and a one-loss Bama. Do they both go?
There's a very, very good chance in that scenario. Depends on what happens with other people. I think there's a very good chance that you end up with two SEC teams, especially if the Big 12 continues to beat each other, right? So there's not a one-loss Big 12 team.
Now, but if that happens and Ohio State and Clemson both show up undefeated, Notre Dame could be in trouble.
No, I think undefeated Notre Dame still gets in. But yes, I think that is also a bad scenario for them. They're going to not want that to happen. So is your group still Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Ohio State?
Yes.
My group is the same. I'm copying you. But you were on that Notre Dame bandwagon wicked early.
I don't believe I've changed my four.
I don't believe you have since the beginning of the year. Mine has shifted. I had Oklahoma in there for a while. I had Georgia in there at the beginning of the year. And Oklahoma, I think, has a shot still. But I think they need a bunch of things to happen for that to happen. Well, Matt, we've gone long, as usual. And so I think this
just,
is...
Just wish our passing offense could do the same.
Oh.
Zing!
That's tough right there. That's tough. Well, Matt, we'd like to thank everybody for downloading and listening. Join us at halftime of the Hawaii game at some unspeakable hour at halftime. We'll be there at facebook.com/riseandshout. Thank you guys for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!